Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's MALDEF briefing on DACA decision call. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, you will have the opportunity to ask questions during the question and answer session, and you may register to ask your question at any time by pressing the star and one on your touch-tone phone. Please note this call may be recorded, and I will be standing by if you should need audio assistance. It is now my pleasure to turn the conference over to Thomas Sines, President and General Counsel of MALDEF. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good afternoon or good evening, depending on where in the country you are. I am Thomas Sines, President and General Counsel of MALDEF, the Mexican American Legal Defense and Educational Fund. Thank you for joining us. As you probably are aware, MALDEF, together with our pro bono co-counsel at Ropes and Gray, have represented 22 DACA recipients who intervened in the lawsuit filed by the state of Texas and eight other states challenging DACA. As intervener defendants, throughout this lengthy and unnecessary litigation, we have strived to limit the potential effects as well as to prevent a conclusion by Judge Andrew Hanen that DACA is unlawful. However, today, as you are aware, Judge Hanen issued a decision granting summary judgment to the plaintiff state, concluding that in his view DACA is unlawful, and directing the implementation through injunction of certain immediate responses to that conclusion that DACA is unlawful. On behalf of MALDEF, I want to emphasize several points. First, although he did issue a decision in expressing his view that DACA is unlawful, Judge Hanen stayed his decision with respect to current DACA recipients. That means that this decision, as of today, has no effect on the rights of current DACA recipients today and in the future. This means that they may continue to apply for renewal of their DACA and to have those renewals adjudicated and granted for the foreseeable future. I want to emphasize that this decision has no effect on current DACA recipients. Nonetheless, a decision from a district court in Texas that DACA is unlawful is a part of the ongoing, cruel roller coaster that our nation has placed DACA recipients on for the last many years. That roller coaster of constant threat to their ongoing ability to continue to contribute in powerful ways to the betterment of our economy, the betterment of our society, and the advancement of our nation is not only cruel, but tremendously terrible policy for our nation. Today's decision, then, once more emphasizes how critically important it is that the Congress step up to reflect the will of a super majority of citizens and voters in this country. That will is to see DACA recipients and other young immigrants similarly situated receive legislative action that will grant them a pathway to permanence and citizenship in our country. The imperative to act is accentuated by the decision issued by Judge Hanen today. However, it is important to note that while the decision was issued today, a reading of the 77 pages produced by Judge Hanen indicates quite clearly that this is an outcome that was determined well over 5 years ago when Judge Hanen issued a decision concluding that President Obama's DAPA, D-A-P-A, Deferred Action for Parents of Americans initiative, and his 2014 expansion of DACA were unlawful. To remind folks, that decision by Judge Hanen went to the Fifth Circuit, which upheld his injunction, and ultimately to the Supreme Court, where an 8-justice Supreme Court in the aftermath of the passing of Justice Antonin Scalia and the Republican Senate's refusal to act on confirmation of a nominee put forward by President Obama meant that the court was shorthanded and ended up deadlocked 4-4 on the critical issues presented in that case challenging DAPA and the expansion of DACA. The decision issued by Judge Hanen today reflects that his views, since he issued that decision on DAPA so many years ago, have not been changed or adjusted in any way to reflect more recent developments in American society and in the law, including the law as determined by the U.S. Supreme Court. In particular, I note that his decision does not address sufficiently the Supreme Court's most recent decision on the standing of states to challenge federal action. This decision came most recently in California versus Texas, the Texas challenge to the Obamacare legislation. He failed to take account or address how his decision that Texas has standing in this case could be reconciled with that most recent Supreme Court decision. In addition, his decision fails to account for the last 4 years of executive action taken by Donald Trump and upheld by the courts that constitute a dramatic expansion of presidential authority, including in the area of immigration. His decision does not incorporate or reflect even an understanding of how that recent experience should change his evaluation of the authority of Presidents Obama and Biden to grant deferred action to DACA recipients. Finally, his decision is in great tension, indeed, direct conflict with a decision by a district court judge in New York. He recognizes that, but fails to reconcile how his decision to issue a nationwide injunction can be reconciled with recent determinations from the Supreme Court reflecting doubt, if not outright hostility, to the issuing of nationwide injunctions by district court judges. Indeed, the clash between two equally situated district court judges in New York and Texas epitomizes the reason that some jurists are hostile to the entry of nationwide injunctions. Today's decision does not grapple at all with that more recent law in the area. As you can surmise, these and other flaws in Judge Hanen's decision, some of those flaws going way back to his DAPA decision, which Maldef intervened in and participated in presenting to the Supreme Court, but these and those flaws preexisting demonstrate ample, potentially successful bases for appealing Judge Hanen's decision. In closing my remarks before I turn to our other two speakers, I want to say thank you to our clients, 22 courageous DACA recipients who stepped forward to challenge the unnecessary and counterproductive lawsuit filed by the state of Texas and others. They undertook this action understanding that their names would be publicly associated with a cause that the state of Texas, 8 other states, and too many others in our country oppose, despite, as I mentioned previously, overwhelming supermajorities across the country that believe DACA recipients should be given permanency in this country. I thank the interveners whose courageous action deferred a decision that was anticipated at the very beginning of this case for over 3 years until today. That courageous action resulting in delaying this predetermined decision from a judge who had failed to adjust his thinking in light of recent developments is a tremendous accomplishment, and we owe a debt of gratitude to our intervening defendant DACA recipient. We'll now hear from two others important to this ongoing struggle before we open to questions. As I mentioned previously, MALDEF has been joined in representing these intervening defendants by pro bono counsel at the law firm of Ropes & Gray. We are grateful to them for their partnership that we expect to continue in achieving great things for our nation. It is my pleasure to ask now to hear from partner at Ropes & Gray, leading their efforts in this case, Douglas Hallward Dreemeyer. Doug.
Thank you very much, Tom. As Tom said, this is Doug Hallward Dreemeyer, partner at Ropes & Gray, and it has truly been our honor to work so closely with MALDEF to represent these 22 DACA recipients as intervener defendants and to stand with them in their courageous defense of the lawfulness of DACA and to protect the interests not only of those 22, but of thousands and hundreds of thousands of other DACA recipients. And I want to underscore, as Tom did, that because of the stay entered by the court with respect to its order, DACA remains in place for those who have already received it, including for additional renewals. This was something that we strongly encouraged the court to do. If it were to take the step of finding DACA unlawful, and we are gratified that we have been able to preserve DACA for present recipients and for their families, their employers, and their communities. As Tom says, we have significant questions and reservations about the analysis that the judge employs in his decision today. We start with the question of Texas's standing and that of the other states. We spent considerable time testing the assertion that Texas or any state had any injury of the type that would give them grounds to challenge DACA. And they were able to come forward with no evidence of the kind of injury that would give them standing to challenge this program. And as Tom mentions, although the Fifth Circuit had earlier upheld Texas's standing to challenge the DAPA program, the analysis in that decision by the Fifth Circuit was the same analysis that was relied on by the Fifth Circuit to hold that Texas could also challenge the Affordable Care Act. And yet, just a month ago, the Supreme Court held that that analysis was wrong and that Texas did not have standing to challenge the Affordable Care Act. And we think the same is true here, that Texas and the other states do not have standing to challenge DACA. And on the substance, we think that the Supreme Court's recent and continued emphasis of the considerable discretion and control that the president and the executive agencies have over immigration is the lawful authority for DACA. And we don't think that the district court's opinion today takes that into account, including even the Supreme Court's reiteration of that discretion in its decision earlier this year with respect to the attempted rescission of DACA, where the court stressed that there was considerable authority on the part of the Department of Homeland Security about how it would act, even if it was planning to repeal DACA, because of the historical authority that the executive has in that area. And then, as Tom has indicated, the fact that the judge's order now creates this inconsistency, this tension between orders of two district courts of the United States, raises an issue of really critical importance in terms of courts asserting authority to enjoin nationwide actions by the federal government. For all of these reasons, we think the judge's order today is subject to review and should be really vulnerable to additional challenge. But the last thing I want to emphasize is that things have changed with the election of President Biden, and the approach of the federal government to these issues has changed. They had already indicated in court earlier this year that they planned to undertake rulemaking. We know that the executive is supporting legislation to address the issue of the Dreamers now, and we are hopeful that the government will both take those steps and vigorously defend the lawfulness of DACA in this litigation, which was not the case during the Trump administration. And so we are hopeful that the government will both stand as allies in the litigation, but also in acting both through administrative and legislative means to protect the interests of DACA recipients, those who have been there here in the United States as productive citizens their entire lives, and to create the pathway to citizenship that Tom referenced. Tom, I hand it back to you.
Thank you, Doug. I previously mentioned our courageous clients, the intervening 22 DACA recipients. They are, of course, part of a nationwide cadre of heroes who have stepped forward at great risk to themselves for well over a decade to advocate for our nation's own best interests, to advocate for what a supermajority of citizens and voters in this country supports, to seek to preserve the contribution of DACA recipients to our nation. From an organizational standpoint, the lead proponent of taking action to protect all of our undocumented contributing immigrant community is United We Dream. It is therefore now my great pleasure to invite United We Dream's Communications Director, Bruna Solov, to speak with you for a few minutes. Bruna.
Thank you so much. My name is Bruna Solov. I serve as the Communications Director of United We Dream and United We Dream Action. We are the nation's largest network of undocumented immigrant youth. Thank you all so much for joining such an important call on a Friday evening, and a huge thank you to the team at MALDEF for your continued partnership in advocating for immigrant young people to protect DACA. I am undocumented and unafraid. I am a DACA recipient myself. My sister has DACA, and I have undocumented parents who are essential workers. So today's decision impacts my entire family and millions more families just like mine. Today's decision, which was led by Republican attacks on immigrant young people and our families, is callous and cruel. To all the immigrant young people who are afraid or scared about what this means for your future, know that United We Dream, MALDEF, and our allies are here, and we have your back. This is our home. We are here to stay no matter what. Today's ruling is a blaring siren for President Biden and Democrats in Congress to act immediately to protect millions of undocumented immigrants from detention, from deportation, and from family separation. Since Trump first tried to end DACA back in 2017, DACA recipients and DACA-eligible youth have lived court case to court case at the whims of politicians who are hell-bent on detaining and deporting our communities. Now, in the coming days, we're going to hear a lot about different politicians on both sides of the aisle who will come out and say to support DACA recipients. Some will even try to use this moment as a way to push their own agenda, introducing legislation that they say will give citizenship to immigrant young people, but that will hurt other immigrants like my parents in return. Republicans in particular will feign sympathy for hundreds of thousands of DACA recipients whose lives are on the line yet again, but say that they will need billions more for deportation agents and border militarization that will only hurt our communities. We must reject empty words and misguided narratives from politicians and instead demand real action and meaningful change that refuses to leave anyone in our communities behind. This ruling is further proof that DACA is not enough. It has always been temporary, and it leaves too many of us vulnerable to the next attack. In the lead up to the 2020 election, United We Dream Action members talked to millions of low propensity voters, undecided, young, and first-time voters to cast their ballots. We organized in key states like Arizona and Colorado, and we helped secure the House, the Senate, and the White House for Democrats. Now, the Democrats have a moral imperative to use the power that the voters gave them to make a true difference in the lives of millions of undocumented people and our families. Citizenship for millions of undocumented people in 2021 is the measuring stick for Democrats in 2022. So the choice is pretty clear. The Biden administration can either continue Trump's white nationalist legacy and allow DACA to be dismantled, or protect our communities by delivering permanent protections now. If this doesn't happen, this failure will fall solely on Democrats. Any deportation and detention of an immigrant young person is on their hands. We know that the only thing that can protect all immigrant young people, TPS holders, farm workers, other essential workers like my parents from deportation, is a path to citizenship through reconciliation. Until President and Democrats in Congress deliver on citizenship, the lives of millions will remain on the line. Again, we urge all Democrats to pass the pathway to citizenship this year. There are no excuses. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Bruna. And I believe we are now ready for questions.
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please press the star and one on your touch-tone phone. And you may remove yourself from the queue at any time by pressing the pound key. Again, that will be star and one if you would like to ask a question today. And we will pause a moment to allow questions to queue. And we will take our first question from Padilla from KQED Public Radio. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Hi, thank you so much for taking this call. This is Farida Jabala with KQED in San Francisco, California. So can you talk about whether you're going to appeal and what happens in the meantime to first-time DACA applicants? What can we expect during the next couple of weeks?
Thank you for your question. First, we will be making an immediate decision about appealing. That is a decision that will involve consultation with our clients and with other intervening parties, including the state of New Jersey. As I mentioned, even on first review, and as Doug has confirmed, there are ample legal bases for overturning Judge Hanen's decision. And we do expect then to take the steps necessary to overturn this decision. But we will make a decision about appeal in the next few days. I will point out that unlike other cases where the only venue in the court system where key issues will be resolved is the appeal itself, the conflict between Judge Hanen's ruling today and what the New York federal court has said in the Bataya-Vidal case means that we could see activity in other cases, in other courts, that may affect the immediate applicability of Judge Hanen's decision. So unlike another case where I would say, watch the appeal, here you've got to watch what goes on in a number of places, what goes on in other courts, as well as what the Biden administration and the Department of Homeland Security choose to do in response to what Judge Hanen ruled today. So, do expect a decision about an appeal very shortly, but recognize that there could be activity that affects Judge Hanen's decision elsewhere in intervening days.
And can you just review what happens to first-time DACA applicants in the meantime?
So in the meantime, in part because of the Bataya-Vidal case, Judge Hanen has indicated that new applications must be received, but he has enjoined the Department of Homeland Security from granting DACA to new applicants. So at least for the moment, those applications are essentially on hold. However, I will note that Judge Hanen made clear that nothing in his decision today remotely requires that any enforcement action ever be taken against any DACA recipient or DACA applicant. Therefore, the administration can and should ensure that all DACA applicants as well as recipients are protected from enforcement action. These young people are, by everyone's estimation, not enforcement priorities under this or any administration, and therefore they should not have to live in fear of any immediate activity to arrest, detain, or remove those who have stepped forward in response to not just the DACA initiative, but more importantly, to the Supreme Court decision mentioned by Doug of a year ago, in which the Supreme Court effectively struck down the Trump administration's efforts to end DACA, and in response to the subsequent New York federal court decision about DACA.
Okay, thank you so much.
Sure.
Our next question will come from Kate Morrissey from San Diego Union Tribune. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you. Two sort of clarification questions. First of all, for people who have had DACA but do not currently have DACA, are they still able to renew, or is there, you know, a length of time of not having renewed that would put them back in the new category? And then for new applicants who have already sent in their applications and have them received, is there like a cutoff date through which those can still be processed, or is it as of today they can no longer be granted even if they were received, you know, months ago?
Okay, to respond to the second part first, under Judge Hanen's decision, if you did not already receive DACA as of today, you cannot be granted it as a new applicant, even if your application has been in and has been caught up in the backlog. Under his decision, if you weren't granted DACA today, as of today, you can't receive it as a new applicant. With respect to the first part of your question, yes, a renewal would have to be timely filed or you lose DACA, and that has been the case. So those folks who have not filed for renewal and who lost their DACA status by expiration some time ago are in the same position they were before, which is they are no longer DACA recipients, and they and the many others who are not current recipients and who are therefore at least in the immediate term affected by this decision, they are among the very strong reasons why Congress needs to act and act immediately to protect these and other long-standing contributing members of our society who are undocumented.
Thank you.
And our next question will come from Maria Sarchetti from the Washington Post. Please go ahead. Your line is open.
Thank you all for holding this. I wanted to ask Mr. Sions, who is responsible here for appealing? So MALDEF is considering appealing. Do you think the government should appeal as well? What is the process there? And is it directly to the appeals court, or can they go to the Supreme Court?
Thanks, Maria. So any of the defendant parties could appeal this decision to the Fifth Circuit. So that includes our client, it includes the state of New Jersey, and it does include the originally named defendants, now the Biden administration. I assume that we will be hearing from the Biden administration very shortly about what their reaction is to today's decision and what they will do in response. If we haven't already, I haven't, it hasn't come across my desk. Now, the process of appeal would be to the Fifth Circuit. In the course of filing an appeal, any appealing party can seek a stay of Judge Hainan's decision in its entirety. It's important to note that Judge Hainan has already stayed his decision with respect to DACA recipients. But in the course of appealing, any appealing party, any appellant, could seek a quick decision from the Fifth Circuit to stay the decision in its entirety. If that request for a stay were denied by the Fifth Circuit, then that appellant could also seek a stay from the U.S. Supreme Court. And that process involves referral initially to the single justice assigned to the Fifth Circuit, and ultimately, if there is further consideration, referral from that justice to the entire 9 justices of the court. I can't at this point tell you whether our clients or any other party will be pursuing a stay. I simply want to make clear that that's what could happen. But it all starts initially with the Fifth Circuit. You all may recall that on a number of occasions, the Trump administration attempted to bypass circuit courts of appeals to go directly to the Supreme Court. In almost every case where they sought such immediate review, it was denied. It is an extraordinary, it would be an extraordinary occurrence for the Supreme Court to decide to bypass a court of appeals. Doesn't mean it won't happen, doesn't mean the request won't be made. But that was a particular characteristic of the Trump administration, I would say. I hope that's clear, Maria.
Thank you very much.
And our next question will come from Anna Varon from EFE. Please go ahead. Your line is open. Please go ahead. You may need to check your mute switch. Anna, please go ahead. Your line is open.
All right. No, just Thomas answered my question. It was about the new applicants. Thank you.
Thanks.
And our next question comes from Alyssa Aquino from Law 360. Please go ahead. Your line is open. Alyssa, please go ahead. Your line is open. You may need to check your mute switch.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Yeah, I know the opinion was long and you just read it now, but on first glance, does it appear that Judge Hanen's ruling prevents the government from enacting any future deferred action program that would cover other equally vulnerable immigrant populations?
As your question suggests, I think we haven't reached a conclusion about that yet. I will say there is various amounts of ambiguity in some of this decision. So, as I said in a previous answer, I think it's important to watch what the administration chooses to do in ensuing days, weeks, and months in response to the decision. Certainly, his actions today leave open the possibility that the federal government could go through a process to try to restore some form or forms of protection to DACA recipients, including potentially new applicants. But I think it will take much more close review to ultimately determine whether that is possible. I would simply point out that Judge Hanen's decision does recognize that in its decision of 13 months ago, the U.S. Supreme Court did distinguish between forbearance or a deferral of any enforcement action and work authorization and other benefits. So he recognizes there's a distinction between those two. Whether that or other provisions of his ruling leave open the possibility of administrative action is really a question first for the administration, but certainly one that we will expect to have a view on as we have more time to review the 77-page ruling and the associated order. I don't know if Doug wants to add anything to that answer. I should have.
No, I thought I agree with you that there's a lot of ambiguity because the court does acknowledge that there is a long history of administrative actions to create both forbearance, but also as a consequence of exercising deferred action, giving rise to work authorization and the like. And the judge thought that those other programs were sufficiently different in scope from DACA that made a legal difference. But, those are the kinds of issues that the administration would have to consider as it's engaging in this rulemaking process that it already told the court that it was likely to undertake.
Is there any more questions?
Yes, and if you would like to ask a question, as a reminder, press star and one. We have a question from Suzanne Moniak from Roll Call. Please go ahead. Your line is
Hi, thank you guys so much for giving the call. This is sort of a follow-up to Alyssa's question in a way, but I was curious if I know like the Department of Homeland Security is working to issue a new rule as we speak, and since the court's decision struck down DACA both on procedural APA grounds and substantive APA grounds. Obviously, going through notice and comment would seem to cure the procedural issue. Is it possible for the Biden administration to overcome the substantive issues as well, or would that have to be an issue decided on appeal? And also, was wondering if you guys had any update on the timing of that, if the government has communicated to you guys when that might be released.
So in answer to the second question, we've not spoken with the government yet. We don't have any sense of what they may be thinking at this point, but we expect to have that conversation sometime soon. With respect to the first aspect of your question, I think I would say we need to engage in further review, as does the government. The substantive objection may or may not extend to the entirety of what DACA provides. As I suggested in the previous question, as did Doug, there are different things that come with DACA. Forbearance, work authorization. Judge Hanen seems to believe that there are other benefits. So his decision is specifically about DACA today, which includes all of those elements. So whether there could be some different configuration is the question that I think further review of his decision would be required. And ultimately, of course, that's a decision that the federal government would have to make about what it chooses to do. That said, the substantive objection is certainly one ripe for appellate review. And that is because the fact is that president after president, going back 40 years, of both parties have granted class-wide deferred action on a number of occasions. And Judge Hanen's rendering of that history is inaccurate in certain critical respects in today's decision, such that I think there is no basis for somehow distinguishing DACA from prior exercises of deferred action on a class-wide basis, including by both President Reagan and President Bush. So it is certainly a very important issue for appeal. But further review of the decision would have to take place with respect to what might or might not be possible prior to appellate review of that decision. And I'll again turn to Doug if he wants to modify or expand.
No need. That was an excellent summary.
And we do not have any further questions at this time.
Great. Well, on behalf of MALDEF, I want to first of all thank once more our clients, the 22 DACA recipients who intervened to defend against an unnecessary and counterproductive lawsuit filed for purely political reasons by Texas and 8 other states. Their courage has already accomplished a tremendous amount for our country, and we look forward to continuing to work with them. I want to thank again the pro bono attorneys at Ropes and Gray, and thank Doug Howard Dreemeyer for joining us today. I want to emphasize once more that we will see lots of developments in ensuing days, weeks, and months in this case and beyond with respect to DACA. I hope, as do all of our other speakers and allies, that some of that activity will be legislative in Congress to act to provide permanency and a pathway to citizenship for not only current DACA recipients, but all of those similarly situated immigrants who contribute of all ages, immigrants of all ages who contribute to our society and our country on a daily basis and are hampered in their full ability to contribute by their status. Congressional action is imperative. And at the lead of advocating for that legislative action will be United We Dream. And I want to again thank Bruna Solid for her joining us today to talk about the effect of today's decision. Thank you all for your time, and we look forward to further conversation with you as the situation develops. Take care.